Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. We welcome you again to Extension 720.
Good evening. This is Milton Rosenberg. Welcome again to Extension 720. Hello to all. This is Milton Rosenberg. We'll talk about that tonight on Extension 720.
Extension 720. Beautiful night in Chicago. A little humid. I'm Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN with you till 10 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. A White Sox winner today gives us an extension 720 tonight. I think this is it, too, this week, right? We have, and then we're on vacation next week, so this is the last extension 720 before Labor Day. Oh! Can you believe it, Pete? We got a good one, though, tonight. We're going to talk about early education and childhood development. It's a topic that has been all over the place when it comes to politics in the state of Illinois and universal pre-K and Governor Pritzker and the mayor of Chicago, of course. But this is very interesting. A national model, an innovative model that's happening in Morton Grove, Skokie, and with Evanston, where they are trying to bring education, early education, to the earliest it possibly can get, and that's birth. Now they're looking at expanding some of their programs, their preschool programs, to younger and younger ages to really help with childhood, early childhood development. We'll have that conversation. We also went out to an event, Popsicles in the Park, which happened just a couple weeks ago, to get these families ready. Talked to some of the parents about their concerns and their optimism over the program. That's coming up here in the 7:30. Tonight, Professor Al Genie is back in the building. Always a pleasure to have our resident philosopher. Professor Genie is going to talk a little bit about leadership as the Democrat debates and primaries sort of get underway, and mostly debates, primaries obviously not until the coming up. What's the first one? The Iowa caucuses, the first one? New Hampshire, right in that area? Ugh. Still months away. It blows my mind every time we talk about it. But, what we want to do is talk about good leadership and what makes effective leadership. Keep the politicians out of it. Keep the brand names out of it, whether it be the person in the White House right now or the people trying to unseat him in the White House. Let's just talk about what it takes to be an effective leader. Al has written on this subject extensively. He's talked about it both from a philosophical and a business aspect. So we'll talk with Al about the 10 different virtues of outstanding leaders. How about that? That's coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Always great. When Professor Genie's here, oh, so great. One of my favorite people, and I'm so glad that he comes in and shares his wisdom with us here on Extension 720. So that'll be coming up in the 8 o'clock hour tonight. The 9 o'clock hour, very excited to talk about one of my favorite places in Chicago, Reckless Records. Reckless Records has been around for 30-plus years, being an independent record store in Chicago. They're going to be part of the big end-of-summer sales that happen in Bucktown and Wicker Park, the neighborhood, this weekend. They do this where one of my favorite things to do in Chicago is whenever you sit around, you got a little bit of extra time, and you're like, do I go to a park? What can I do where I'm not necessarily going to spend money? The first thing I do, like, what doesn't have a cover charge? And almost always it's, do you want to go, I'll say to my wife, do you want to go walk along Milwaukee Avenue, where Milwaukee and North Avenue are, and just kind of look at the shops? And it's pretty amazing, the turnover and what they've done almost all the way down south to Division. It's amazing, those storefronts, and some great stuff. And I take my son Miles over to the old Dave Eggers spy store that's there. And there's so many great things. Well, Reckless Records are part of that. They're right there at 1379 North Milwaukee. And for the end of summer sales they have, they're going to do like sidewalk sales down there this weekend. They are actually expanding the record shop underground. They're going literally to a bargain basement. They've always had a basement at Reckless Records, but it's been off limits. It's just been a storage facility. And they have redone it. And they're putting more and more new material and old material, whatever they have, downstairs. I mean, talk about the ultimate bargain basement, an independent record store, Reckless Records. But the great thing, we'll talk with Melissa over at Reckless Records about how they stay in business. I'm always flabbergasted at I don't know what it is. Maybe we can ask Al Genie this too. But the tech sector in Silicon Valley, they have done so much for our society and for our immediacy and for making a customer's experience so much better. But they do it at the expense of places like Reckless Records. They almost in their business plan is like, we need to get rid of the record store. We need to get rid of records entirely. And there are now artists, not unlike Chance the Rapper right here in Chicago, who don't even press anything. They don't make records. They don't make tapes. They don't make CDs. They don't do anything. They just upload it to SoundCloud or write to Apple or get an exclusive deal with Tidal or Spotify. And you never actually see it in your hand. And that's what Reckless Records is up against. As the tech sector and the music industry have come together as one, and they are looking for ways to deliver and distribute music that does not include the record store. So what do you do in that case? Well, it has a lot to do with culture. So we'll talk with Melissa at Reckless Records about that coming up a little bit later in the show. We'll go over there. So how about that? That sounds like a good show. Does that not sound like a good show? Leadership, early education, and Reckless Records. I like it. Also, Doug from Felco will be here, too. We'll talk about the importance. I've always wanted to talk with Doug about this. The importance of the jingle. And it is a jingle that, of course, right away, people are like, oh, Felco, I know that jingle. But what is it about a jingle in Chicago that makes or breaks a business? So we'll talk about that as well as part of our Download in Chicago Business, which comes to you later in the program. That is a jam-packed Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. We'll take our first break here. We'll come back, and we'll get ready and kick off the show. Stay with us. It's Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. Coming up, we'll talk early education, development, and a new program that is in Skokie, Morton Grove, and Evanston. Coming up here, and of course, Professor Al Jean is going to join us, talk about the virtues of great leaders, the 10 virtues of outstanding leaders. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. And like I said, Reckless Records, of course, as well. My co-host tonight, just to pop in and pop out, is a familiar voice, especially to the Steve Cochran Show, and that is my son, Miles.
Hello!
How you doing, buddy?
Good.
So as you know, we are a CPS family, so there is no school until after Labor Day. So camps are over, grandma's stay is over.
Yes, yes it is.
And you are now sort of bouncing back and forth between a little stay at home here, maybe go to work with dad, go to work with mom. You got a lot of different things coming up in the
camps. A lot of different things, yeah.
So what are you looking forward to in the next couple weeks here before you go back to school in September?
Well, the Kaufman/Co family is excited for our trip to Washington, or Seattle, Washington, and Portland, Oregon.
Yes, right. We're going next week.
Yes, we're going to see the Space Needle.
What are you looking forward to the most?
In that trip?
Yeah.
Probably, if I can find it, because it's my portion of the research, the Bill Cipher statue from Gravity Falls. Shout out to all my Gravity Falls fans out there. Hashtag Bill Cipher Hunt. Yeah. Subscribe down below.
Right.
I didn't know radio ran in your family, Justin.
That's right. Well,
wow.
It does when there's when there's no babysitters at home and he has to come with to work. But Miles, you're talking about Gravity Falls
and
it's a cartoon that was set in Oregon.
Yes.
So there's some relics that are left that are in real life that are there.
Yes, ARGs. Speaking of ARGs, I would like to talk about something that I've been pestering Dad with all day.
Yes.
So you know what's good. Okay, so I don't know if any of you heard, because most of you are probably like adults, but there's this thing, if you have kids, they probably know about it. It's called The Theorist Gateway, and it's by MatPat from Game Theory and Film Theory.
So this is a YouTube channel.
Yes, it's a YouTube. He's a YouTuber, but he made a bunch of puzzles, and the newest one, Gate 7, comes out on August 31st.
Okay, well, that's enlightening.
Yes. I'm excited.
I can tell
probably
you're pumped
up. Probably because I'm just running off Mike and Ike's right now.
There are a lot of Mike and Ike's.
Sour Mike and Ike's.
May have made a mistake as a parent to stop at the CVS and get a big thing of Mike and Ike's sours before this broadcast, thinking that would possibly keep you busy, but you have already run through those even on the radio as we speak. We're going to be talking tonight about Reckless Records. We're going to be talking about leadership. We're going to be talking about early education. Do you have anything to say about those topics?
About early education?
Sure.
I don't remember, probably because I was like three, I don't remember getting any early.
You did, though. We went to preschool.
Early, per se, education.
We went to curriculum-based preschool, and you were that was what we had to do at the time. But this is a program that starts, they want to start at birth. They want to get kids ready and developmentally ready for what comes next in school at birth. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, my five-year-old self would throw a lot of tantrums, but...
Right. Okay.
I feel like it would be good for the growth of the human.
All right. Good job.
Because, like, if I probably had early education, I would probably be a bit smarter than I am now. Although I probably wouldn't really have retained any of the knowledge, so it's kind of pointless.
Well, we'll see about that. We got a long way to go. Okay, so what about leadership? Do you feel like...
Leadership, what do you mean?
Do you feel like you're a good leader, like with your friends in 6th and 7th grade?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, yes. Why? What makes you a good leader?
I have good leadership qualities. I have confidence. Confidence is key, because other people don't have confidence, therefore they're not confident. They don't have the right... They don't have...
Okay.
That was a bad word.
Right.
They don't have the... They don't have the bravery to stand up.
Okay. That's interesting. There
and
is
I
a
do.
There is one here that says moral courage. It's one of the things I want to give away some of Professor Jeannie's work, research, but
That's
okay.
pretty much
and it. And then Reckless Records, it's a music or record store on Milwaukee Avenue. Are you a big music guy?
Yes, I like music.
What kind of music are you into right now?
I don't know what kind of genre to describe it as. Probably current.
So you like top 40? You like
yes,
stuff on the radio.
I like top 40.
And so you're going to make a playlist to go to. I told you that I'm not sure they're going to have movies on the flight, like because we're taking a different airline. So you have to make a playlist and be ready. What is some of the music that's going to show up on that playlist?
Probably most of the things that are top 40, except for the Get Up. That song,
The Get Up.
It's. I shouldn't have told you because now you're going to play it. Like, it's a country song. It's like the new line dance.
Oh, okay.
Of country songs. And
okay.
it's...
You don't like
I mean, it's pretty, like, it's cheerful. And it's, like, so, like, country. And I'm like, oh, my God, I already have Old Town Road.
We all have Old Town Road.
We all have Old Town Road to cry on.
All right. Well, thank you, Miles. And I appreciate... And the last thing is, do you know the jingle for Felco?
Quantity Windows Signing and Doors, call 866 for Felco.
So that's just off the top of your head.
Yes.
That's the importance of a jingle. See?
That's the importance of commercial advertising.
There you go. There
of it Windows.
Is. For Windows. That's
on Cartoon
right.
Network.
Oh, that must be it. Thank you, Miles, for sharing and sort of giving us a table of contents on what's
You're
coming up
welcome.
On the show. And
You're
we
welcome.
Will take a quick break, and then we'll get David Jennings in the headlines, and then we'll continue and start Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. It is Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, so let's talk early education. It's a sunny weekday morning in Skokie, and the playground is packed with kids and parents. It's the annual Popsicles at the Park event that welcomes families back to school. This year, there's new partnership between Skokie-Morton Grove School District 69 and the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. The program is called Ready for Success, and it's all about getting kids ready for school before they can even go. This is part of the state of Illinois' push for early childhood development. The Illinois School Board provided a grant for this program. The goal is to focus on early education beyond just preschool, but from birth. And parents like Nora, who has a four-year-old, are all in.
I was looking for the best possible way how to raise my kid. And I understand that from 0 to 3 is, for me, that's really crucial. I just got tired looking on the internet, trying to like raise my kid just based on researching and Googling and not have that support.
Ready for Success believes that early education is the key to how a child's brain develops. No longer are we living in a world where a kid can, well, be a kid till kindergarten starts. Now, it's all about getting them ready for kindergarten. Tawanda Moore is with the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. She conducts home visits to the kids from birth to 3 years old.
The baby's brains are like sponges. So at an early age, they are learning every day. What they see, what they smell, what they feel is all a learning experience. So pretty much we want to get to them. We do prenatal, so we start from belly.
Okay? I'm getting wrong. I've been saying birth to third, belly to third.
We start from belly to third. third year. So, yes, we try to get in as soon as we can and make sure that parent and child interactions are happening in the home. We give them a lot of information about early literacy, development. We also do assessments to make sure that they are growing properly, and if not, we give them the resources to help them.
The home visits were the key for Saika. Saika has two children, ages 4 and 2. She's originally from Pakistan and has no family in the area. And that has an impact on her children.
When I joined this group and Miss Fake came my house, and she was so, like, optimistic lady and very friendly kind of. And she was really nice. And every week she bring the activity for Huria and for my daughter. And because I was concerned that my son was speech delay and she should be talked soon, and it worked. And she talked at the age of 9 months. So, and now she is almost 23 months old and she's advanced of her age. Of course, my kids are a little shy because of maybe no family. So now it's like a home for me.
So back to the house visits. What does Tawanda Moore from the IWSC do when she shows up at your house?
We pretty much try to take the parents' lead. So we want to figure out what is going on with the child, if there's anything that they like. And then we'll actually see where they are in a benchmark kind of way as far as where they're supposed to be growing developmentally. We come together with that, and we bring activities. We try to use things in the home because once we leave, they won't have what we brought. So we try to use what they actually have on most days. We try to get out and do some nature walks to get the kids familiar with what they'll see around, and then we get them ready for pre-K before they go into preschool.
Sylvia is a mother of a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, and she swears by this program. She isn't worried about putting early pressure on her child.
I think it's more play-based, so that pressure is not kind of the drill and kill. So it's play-based. I think the children don't even realize that they're learning, and I think that's the magical piece of it, is that they come, they're having fun, they're painting, they're interacting, they're dramatic playing, and they don't even realize that, you know, there's letters, there's sight words in there, there's all of these hidden treasures that they're experiencing. So I think that pressure really isn't there, because they don't come home with homework and they don't, you know, come home all stressed out. They had a great day, they were engaged, and so I think it's the hidden treasures.
But it's not just about home visits. It's networking, parent groups, and even family nights where everyone can get together. Right now, this program is a pilot program, but the hopes are that it will become a national model for early childhood education. Now in studio with me tonight, Margaret Clausen. She's the superintendent at Morton Grove Skokie District 69, and Stephen Vick, he's executive director of the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. Thank you so much for being in studio tonight. I appreciate you coming down.
Great, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, so let's get right to this. As we heard some of the stuff in the piece here, just about this Ready for Success, where did this idea come from for you guys to come together and create this model?
Sure. So actually, we were brought together by Community Schools Initiative about 3 years ago. I had a mutual connection with Margaret, and we were brought together and we started talking about early childhood, pre-K, the pre-K program that Margaret had, which is called TOPS. And there was an opportunity that developed with the Illinois State Board of Ed to write a joint grant. And so a couple years in the making, we decided to write for this grant mm-hmm. together. And we were accepted for a 5-year amount.
This is something that obviously we heard a lot about in a campaign trail. We heard it from not only the politicians, both the governor and the former mayor, about universal pre-K and getting the kids younger. I mean, how does this all sort of fall into place when you're talking about trying to reach to families to start developing their kids earlier?
Sure. So I think, you know, we do hear a lot of universal pre-K, which is really thinking about 4-year-olds mostly. Infant Welfare Society of Evanston specifically focuses on prenatal to 3 years old. And so one of the things that we have learned and through the research in our conversations and working with various groups is understanding that the brain is developing at such an amazing rate in the first 3 years of life. There's a study put out by Harvard University that said there's 1 million neural connections per second happening in the first 3 years of life. And so with that information, it's how are we engaging infants? How are we engaging parents to understand the science behind mm-hmm. brain development? And we're really building the architecture for learning and education.
The science has been there, Superintendent. This is something that people know, and there are books, and there are private preschools and place and curriculum-based everything to get, but the resources haven't. So for when you're talking about expanding at District 69 and also entering into this program, into this collaboration with Stephen, you must notice that there are more resources available for trying to get the kids younger at this point.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's kind of unique for a school district. Traditionally, we've thought about, you know, children when they turn five. We get them and look to see where they come into us, and really trying to reach back and get kids earlier to help prepare them for school and help our families. And it falls under this community schools model that we have, where we really think about the whole child and the whole community and engage in our families at a much earlier point in their child's development. We know that what's happening in those, especially those 0 to 3 year old age range, is really building the foundation for success, not only educationally, health, longevity, all of those areas. And so I think we have a unique position to be able to, you know, we're seen as the educational leader mm-hmm. in the community. We're sort of a central hub of the community. Perhaps we have children that are older in our system. And so our ability to kind of do that outreach and help raise the awareness of our families and attract them. And then to have infant welfare with their expertise kind of come in and do the things that they know are best prenatally to three. That's really how this collaboration grew.
Are you seeing more parents interested? And you heard a little bit in the piece with the parents that were talking at the Popsicle Day. This idea that they want to start education at a younger age. Because I think in my generation, and maybe parents before, there was a sort of idea that was on them until a certain time, 3 or 4 years old. Are you seeing more parents today saying, you know what, the baby's born, it's time to start school?
Well, I think the interesting piece is the whole foundation of this program is that we're walking alongside families. The parents are the first educator of their child. So we aren't taking that away. We're supporting them. And how do you help encourage and develop your child? What are the experiences, the interactions that you have, how you attach with your child, how you encourage your child to explore their environment, how you take what you have in your home and use that to help encourage and push your child. So I think people think that we're taking their children and, you know, putting them in mm-hmm. and pushing academics down at a much earlier age. And right. this is all very developmental, play-based, active. You know, you came to Popsicles in the Park, you talked to parents, they're talking about the fun that they're having.
Right. So I don't want to give key. The impression, I guess you don't want to give the impression that the baby is taken away from the family. No. Like, you will go to the classroom for 4 hours.
Well, I think that's one of the things about early childhood education. We're also an early Head Start program in our classroom-based programs, and the model is really about family strengthening. It's not just about child and educating the child. It's really about building the supports and mechanisms around the entire family. And so the home visiting model is really a great example of that, where the mantra we use in the baby talk curriculum that we have is walking alongside parents. And so it's really a matter of building a trusting relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different families in District 69. I think there's 70 languages spoken in the community. So there's a lot of immigrant and refugee families. And building the trust and relationship to come into someone's home is a big deal. So that's where this program really starts. It's through the human connection with parent and family. And then once that bond is built, then we could start talking about some of the science behind early learning. We can talk about some of the activities that we can do and that they can do in their home with their children. So it's really not rigorous classroom education. We're not talking about ABCs, 1, 2, 3s with infants. We're really talking about eye contact and touch and basic communication and learning how babies respond and react to parents and caretakers' actions. So those are those neural connections that are stemming off. Every time there's a communication, there's those yeah. neurons are firing.
Superintendent Clausen, in District 69, there are you seeing more kids ready when they get to preschool? Are you seeing more of a generational shift where people are recognizing that preschool needs to be curriculum-based, or that there needs to be at least a preparation before they get to kindergarten?
I think that for some families, yes, and for some families, no. And so we look at about 40% of our kids come in kindergarten ready on the assessments that we have. So that was one of the reasons why we were particularly interested in how do we begin to help work with our families of early, younger children. We have a large immigrant refugee population. Our low income is around 50%. Families are disconnected from maybe even grandparents. So you heard the one parent talking about how, you know, she's here from Pakistan. She doesn't have maybe her own mother or someone who's raised children to kind of help her along the way. And so I think that's where programs like this are really important for families and to help really support them. So while I think there are some people who are really tuned into preschools and, you know, getting their kids into early learning experiences right. and doing that, this is really really an access and equity kind of thing yeah. to make sure that everybody
great.
Can access
Let's
that.
Do this. Let's take a quick break, and I want to get to that. That'd be a great way to sure. continue the conversation. In studio with me, Superintendent Margaret Clausen. She's at Morton Grove Skokie District 69, and Stephen Vick, Executive Director of the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. We're talking about Ready for Success and Early Childhood Development right here in the state of Illinois. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and continue the conversation here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Extension 720 tonight. Fascinating conversation about early childhood development and early education. Superintendent Margaret Clausen from Morton Grove Skokie District 69 and Stephen Vick, he's the Executive Director of the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. They are the two forces that come together for Ready for Success, which is an innovative way to really approach pre-pre-K, if you will, like the idea of birth to three with childhood development. As you mentioned right before, which is really important, it's this idea that you're not taking kids that are one year old, 2 year olds and putting them in a classroom for 5 hours a day and they got lunch and recess. That's not what we're talking about here. This is more about childhood development. But the other question, and a texter texts in saying, what is kindergarten ready?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a lot of different assessments that are done. The one that I can best point to that's happening in the state of Illinois is the KIDS assessment, which is the Kindergarten Individual Development Survey. And that was just done this last year, and I don't know if you heard the data came out of readiness. And really what they're looking at is multiple domains of learning. There's actually 14 different measures, but they all come around three main areas. So it's social, emotional, literacy, and mathematics. But some of the data that they found is really, really surprising and something we all need to pay attention to. In all these different domains, they found that only 26% of the population of kindergartners are, quote-unquote, ready for school in these areas. And so that's kind of a wake-up call to say, well, what is happening and why aren't kids, quote-unquote, ready? And I think one of the things that we focus on in the earliest years is the social-emotional development. Again, it's not ABCs, 1-2-3s when you're working with a 12-month-old or an 18-month-old. It's really thinking about how they're socially functioning, how they're learning, how they're interacting, their regulation, being involved with other children and how they interact. We see behaviors all the time in early childhood that are warning signs and signals where there's concerns and things that are happening. And so part of being ready for kindergarten is being able to listen, being able to sit still, being able to take direction. It's not always
right.
it's just not, yeah. having all those numbers and letters.
We mentioned right before the break about equity. Mm-hmm. This is something that is playing out in every part of our society right now. But this idea that you do also see when it comes to income level, when it comes to race and class, there are differences and there are disparities between who is ready for pre-K or ready for kindergarten, who's not.
Right. And I think that's the piece that's nice about this is it really does level that playing field. So, you know, you were talking about paying tuition-based preschool programs and programs and classes that parents sign up their children for and can do that if their income allows them to. Having a pre-K program that's funded allows our families to access those same kinds of experiences. The music and me and the mommy and me kinds of programs, they're able to get that in that home
right.
visiting and family support specialists.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is important to understand is a lot of the families that we work with, again, we're funded by the Illinois State Board of Education. We're looking at some of the most needy families, low-income families that are struggling with multiple issues, whether it's housing, whether it's food security, whether it might be bouncing between lower-paying jobs. There's a lot of complications that low-income families face and new immigrant and refugee families face. And so one of the things that we do, again, is wrap services around these families.
Mm-hmm.
we're not just working with the children, but finding resources, finding supports for these parents to stabilize the home environment. One of the things that's talked about a lot is toxic stress. And when we talked about these neural connections that are happening, if there's a lot of stress in a home, and that, again, that could be violence, it could be substance abuse, it could be homelessness, those experiences are being taken in by that early brain. And that can be very serious in terms of the foundation that's being created for learning in kindergarten, first grade, second grade.
Right.
And so, again, part of this is not just about, like you said, taking kids out and doing rigorous educational activities with them. It's around wrapping services. It's around the social emotional support, the developmental support, and helping parents understand how critical these skills are.
All right. My last question is, we have about 2 minutes left here, and this is the big one. That's what I want to ask. It's just about shifting the paradigm of what we know to be education in this country. If you're seeing these numbers just in the state of Illinois that 26%, the kids are not ready for what we consider the levels that need to be ready for kindergarten. Are you going to see a shift in American policy and American education where maybe they say kindergarten starts at 4 or possibly sort of structured schooling starts earlier than 5 years old? Do you see the future of that?
I don't know what that's going to look like. I do think, we know it's the first 1,100 days. We know that the first, 3 years of life are super important and the payoff. There's a lot of economists even here in Chicago that do some research on this and tell us every dollar we invest in early childhood pays off in the long haul. And that, looking at kindergarten readiness is great, but it is one kind of short-term factor. Looking at the longevity of, life expectancy, the health issues that come, the economic issues that come later, the educational attainment overall. So I think that as a country, we are going to have to invest in our earliest kids, and that's going to pay off in many, many ways. And the kindergarten readiness is one thing that we talk a lot about, but I think it's much bigger and broader than that. And it's not just about getting them ready to come and sit in a classroom in kindergarten. It's making sure that they're healthy and that toxic stress, it happens across income levels. Yeah. And families are more stressed today. Kids are growing up in a more stressed environment. Yeah. And so how we can help really turn that around for kids.
Well, it's a fascinating program. Ready for Success is the name of it. It's a partnership between the School District 69 and the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. Margaret Clausen is the superintendent at the District 69. Stephen Vick is the executive director of the Infant Welfare Society of Evanston. I'd love to have you both back, and we could really unpack the idea of shifting the paradigm of what we know to be not just early education, but education in this country. Thank you so much for coming in studio tonight on Extension 720.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we'd love to.
Thanks, David. Extension 720 rolling along here till 10 o'clock tonight, 312-981-7200. Thanks to everyone who called on the early education segment. We're talking about childhood development. Some people say it really has to fall on the parents. We talked about what it means to be kindergarten ready. This isn't a surprise to anybody. These are the topics that we should be talking about. So lots to do, and I invited them both to come back. The White Sox season will be over here in September, and we'll have a little bit more breathing room. The Blackhawks will be on as well. But we'll have some more breathing room, and we can have a conversation about sort of shifting the paradigm of what we know to be education in this country. It's a fascinating conversation. We'll continue it here on Extension 720. I am very happy to continue the relationship and the conversation with my next guest, Professor Al Genie, our resident philosopher here on Extension 720. He, of course, professor of business ethics over at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago, an author and a lecturer and a professor and a dear friend. Professor Genie, great to see you tonight.
Again, at
live
my
in
age,
studio.
It's great to be seen. Just great to be seen. But there's something to be thankful for. I don't know if you saw it this week. Colbert was interviewed by on CNN by Anderson
Cooper. Yeah.
It was a therapy session, and both of them said something that I riveted to. I'm thankful for my life. It could have been an entirely different experience. Mm. I'm thankful. Not every day when I should be, but I am thankful for my life. It's been a gift. And that's how I'm feeling more and more.
I love it. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Tonight, let's talk leadership. And we're not specifically talking about, we don't want to confuse this. This is not a political conversation. It's not even a business conversation. We want to be bigger than that.
Right.
These are about the virtues and the ingredients for quality and outstanding leadership.
Right.
This is something you've written about before, and this is something that I think when we talk about the 10 virtues of outstanding leadership and leaders, this will help people make decisions
I hope
who
so.
The boss should
they're,
be.
They're my 10 virtues, that, along with my co-author, Ron Green. But I think the purpose here is, I am tired about talking about personalities and programs. And I sit there because I'm dutiful and because I teach this material, so I have to sit there. And I'm listening, and I'm taking copious notes, and the distinctions between this and that, and how many new, how many nine, and what's going on here, and this program and that program. And then you have to then filter that through the personality. Is Bernie too old? You know, there's an old joke Miller was, my grandfather was 75, we didn't let him touch the remote control, let alone have his button on, the atomic button, right? And being 75, I totally understand that. I'm not allowed to touch it at all. But the reality is, I think these personalities, and we're getting mad at this personality, and then are you mad at the president? Are the Democrats losing the way? Let's talk about the principles, and not the policies or the personalities. What are the principles that are sine qua non conditions to be a leader, whether it's a Boy Scout group or the President of the United States?
Right.
And I think that they are the same, only their importance and their application, there's a great deal of flexibility.
Yeah, and when you talk about quantifying this, define it. How do you define leadership?
Well, you know, that's a murky waters of leadership. There's no one single definition of leadership, and there's no one single methodology that allows a leader to be an appropriate leader in any kind of situation. And the classic example of that is called Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill was a warrior. Winston Churchill was a student of history. Winston Churchill was prepared for that job, but he was rotten as a domestic minister. He was not good in regard to monies, et cetera, et cetera. But he knew how to mobilize. Mm-hmm. He knew how to energize, and he knew the stuff that was needed to successful war. And there's this wonderful story of that when the Japanese finally attacked Pearl Harbor, Churchill calls FDR and says, "You're in it now, old chap. We're going to win." But because he knew and he understood those things. And I think that Martin Luther King, I think, was a wonderful minister, but perhaps would not have been a good CEO of a corporation. So I think the reality is, leader is not one division and complex. It's a series of different virtues and talents that are specific. It's about time, place, education, and preparedness and circumstance. And as Machiavelli said, fortuna.
And you
are
mentioned,
you lucky?
And you mentioned in the notes as well, you talk about Abraham Lincoln. Would we look at him the same way if he would have lost the
Civil
War?
That's right. I mean, Lincoln is our secular god. I mean, in Chicago, in my youth, we got Washington's birthday off and Lincoln's birthday off. But on Lincoln's birthday, we're required to come to Mass, even though it was a day off. Why? Because Lincoln was a saint. Lincoln freed the slaves. Lincoln was a good man, even though he wasn't Catholic. You know, that's what I'd say. But nevertheless, if non-Catholics could get to heaven, Abraham Lincoln did it, and he died for us and a martyr for us. But those qualities, and he knew it. You know, this wonderful film, that wonderful film, Lincoln, he said, "I have to pass this 13th Amendment." He knew what he had to do. He had to break the law in order to get a larger law made. And his argument was, would I not cut off my arm to save my body? Would I not, you know, lose a leg to continue to live? And he said, yes. Yeah. So I must break certain laws in order for the larger pool. Now, that's always a dangerous phenomenon, because Adolf Chickelgruber said the same thing after he was elected in 1933. He said, well, these new laws now are ridiculous. Yeah. I now make myself
And there's something to be said that's happening in America
now
as well.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the 10 virtues of outstanding leaders. You have put together 10 different sort of chapter heads, if you will, and we're going to go through them in this hour. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's start with the first one, and it's a good one.
But can we back up just one thing?
I think you forgot. I hate when we back up.
I know, but you got to do it.
I
think there's two preconditions to talking
about. Preconditions.
The preconditions are character and stewardship. That is, I want to know about a person. The most important thing about a person is, what do you value? What's important to you? Do you remember, you weren't at the other place then. I had to interview Eddie Verdoliak when he was going to run for mayor. And so I was the host that day. I was a substitute host. And he came in, and his entourage came in. And I said, "Mr. Verdoliak, nice to see you." And he was certainly all dressed up, and he was ready to, you know, and he was Eddie at his power. And I said, "So why are you running for mayor?" And he said, "Well, when I'm mayor, the water department's going to be all rehabbed." And I kept asking, "Why are you running for mayor?" And he kept answering some platform issue, the police department, so on and so forth. And then we had to do it. This is Al Genie, da-da-da-da, and we'll be back in a moment.
You had to sign off.
Right, I had to sign off. And I put my hand up to my ear so the audience could tell, and he says, "Listen, kid, you asked me that damn question again, and I'm walking out of here right now. Why am I going to be mayor? Because it's my damn turn."
Character
and that
and
man should never have been mayor, anybody who wants the job. There's a real issue here, philosophically, because Socrates talked about this in the Republic. Nobody who is smart enough to do the job wants the job because they understand the impediments of the job, the responsibility of the job, and that it is a killing experience. Look at Mr. Obama now. He's an old man. You know, yeah. Mr. Clinton went into the White House dyeing his hair white. He didn't have to. He didn't have to do that by his second.
Well,
term.
I mean, you know, and you know, of course, we're talking. We're getting above the. I want to stay above the personalities, right. but when you do talk about character and stewardship, what do you mean by stewardship?
Well, stewardship is, and I think this is really fundamental. So, character. Let's just say that is what do you value? What's important to you? What do you hold dear? So, your ethics. Mm-hmm. Stewardship is this critical evaluation that. You agree with St. Augustine that the first and only job of leadership is the well-being of the people you lead, that this job is not about you, that you, this is not
it's about your followers.
It's about your followers. You right. only exist. In fact, how do we judge a successful leader? By the well-being of those who follow, mm-hmm. by the people who he or she is in charge of.
No, I try to interpret that, and I understand the general, the larger concept here, but I also say, you know, when you just talk about politics, doesn't that lead us to a more divisive situation where the followers are specifically voters, people who voted for you, Al?
Yeah.
I voted for you, so you better take care of me. And you only take care of them.
Right.
You don't take care of the other people who didn't vote for you. How do you balance that?
That's the danger of democracy, because as Socrates again pointed out, a democracy is a demigod that just a vote does not guarantee wisdom or virtue. So there's always that problem. But I think prescinding that problem is the belief that that leader, whoever the leader is, whether it's a Boy Scout group or President of the United States, believes that they are in that office to be of service to others and not to be of mm-hmm. service to themselves. Mm-hmm. That's the larger principle. Yes, in the particular, you know, I'm in fact, what's his name? Bernie was asked about, well, you voted for this, so on and so forth. He says, because I promised my constituents that I would vote against fire, automatic weapons. Yeah, but the bill was larger than that. He says, I know, and it was a bad vote on my part, but I had to do that because I promised them the danger of democracy.
Stewardship. Professor Al Genie is my guest. We're talking about the 10 virtues of outstanding leaders. We'll take a break. And then we'll come back and we will start the list. I am excited to get through these. Always a pleasure to have the professor, our resident philosopher, in the studio. We'll take a break here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Professor Al Genie in studio, our resident philosopher. Professor of Business Ethics over at the Quinlan School of Business, also an author, including his book back in 2013 called 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders, Leadership and Character, which he co-wrote with Ron Green. You know, this conversation, and you have the list, and we're going to get to it right now. We're talking about the 10 virtues of outstanding leaders tonight. What's a virtue?
Well, they're my virtues, first of all. We want to make that clear.
Okay, but,
there's because of 1,000. But let's talk virtue. Virtue is a habit, an action you choose to do, you perpetuate, because it increases the quality and goodness of your life. So as a runner, as an athlete, you run every day to maintain a certain bodily skills. You work out, you watch your diet, et cetera, because it is a habit that and an action that makes your life better. And so when we talk about philosophical virtues, it's not something esoteric or mysterious or, you know, humming into the universe. It is something that you do. Integrity
right.
makes life easier. In a very real sense, to be thoughtful and to be specific about what you value and to be continuous in that makes one's life easier. Doesn't have to doubt it, et cetera, et cetera.
It's exercise for your character.
Exercise for your character. Very nice. We're working on a beat tonight, Justin. We're working on a beat tonight.
All right. Let's get to these.
So
Ryan and I decided
on 10, and there are 10, and we would have added one more, but we didn't because we were fighting about it in humor, but we'll leave that alone.
All right.
And the first one is deep honesty. And
deep
honesty. Do you think that's simple? I mean deep honesty, I usually don't tell a lie. I mean the inability to tell a lie. I think that what we need in leaders is someone who says, I cannot play with the facts. I cannot distort the facts. I cannot be God. I cannot decide when I reveal issues and policies, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's hard to believe, too, because leaders today, the most effective, the ones that are, I would say, the most powerful, whether it be political or business, There, it feels like their first inclination is to cover it up.
Cover it up.
We find that all the time. That seems to be the Achilles heel of great leaders.
And part of that is, when do you reveal the truth? Is it appropriate to do it at that time? But I'm talking as an overall policy of doing business. For example, in the famous Tylenol case, I think the guy who ran the Tylenol case simply couldn't do anything else but rip that place apart to find out what's going on, because he was in charge, he was responsible, and he had to know what was going on. And he did it with such draconian efficiency.
This is the poisoning in the
poisoning
80s,
event
right,
now
right.
35
yeah,
years
right.
ago.
Yeah, it's a long time.
That he did it with such efficiency, they say, he's got to be a nut. No, he was being honest. He was being consistent. He couldn't live with a lie. And I think that what we're talking about a leader is, can you live with a lie, or do you need to be honest with those who you deal with?
Yeah.
Now, honesty doesn't always mean that you tell a young child, you know, something that they can't handle.
Right.
Or you tell grandma she's got cancer, she's going to pass out.
Right.
And so on. You decide how that is done, but you don't ever really contemplate the thought, do I have a right to withhold vital information to others in a vital situation?
Now, there is some situations, and let's talk politically, there's some situations where it's sensitive material and the time's not right, and you see politicians and lawmakers will say no comment.
No comment at
or
that point.
Say other things,
that's a valid point. It's I can't talk about that yet. You saw Obama do that all the time. Obama said the hardest part of his day was not the meetings upon meetings that he had staff prepare him for. It wasn't the meeting 10,000 people out there who won the chicken rolling contest. Chicken rolling, a new sport we've decided on.
Yeah, right.
It was waking up or being woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning and a tsunami hit here someplace, or a terrorist bombing someplace. Mm-hmm. And now we had to make a decision without knowing anything, without knowing enough facts. And instead of blurting out, no, we're going to take care of it, he just said, I need to sit down with my staff.
This.
I have to have the process. I'll get back to you as soon as I can.
This is a harder one, because I think this makes a lot of sense, especially if you're a leader of a community or maybe you're a leader of, like you said, a Boy Scout troop.
Yeah.
When it comes to politics, we have a industry, and that we're speaking right now to the masses, but there's a media industry that's job it is to uncover the truth or to uncover a lie. And it seems that questions are asked in so many different ways that there are times where politicians unwittingly lie because they just don't know that.
Well,
at this point, they don't even know what the truth is.
The game makes the game confusing.
Yeah.
What I'm advocating is that I will not lie, but I will not always tell you all of the truth just on demand.
Right.
There's appropriate time to do that. But I do not have the right to decide for everyone what is true and not true. And that's what we mean by a deep honesty.
That's
an important thing.
All right, what's number two?
Moral courage.
And
we know, we talk about courage all the time, you know, and it's easy to name, you know, Marines that run into a place in Fallujah and save people, and I'm not diminishing that at all, believe me. Or we just celebrated these astronauts. Have you watched all that? Would you strap yourself into that capsule and be shot out into the moon with your chances
with
of coming
aluminum.
Back 1 in 10? And with a computer not as sophisticated as your cell phone? You've got to be... Cell phone, a calculator. Are you kidding? But for me, moral courage is not the physical. It's being able to live out what you value, to put it on the line. Lincoln lived out what he's like. I'm made president. I didn't want to be president. I wanted to be a senator. I ran for this thing. I got it. And now I'm going to do this no matter what. King knew he was going to be killed. That was an issue. But he knew that he had to spread the word in a certain way.
And another example you put down is Rosa Parks.
Absolutely.
And that's a good example, because that is someone who made a statement and had moral courage for the leadership of her moment. As she wasn't running for president, she wasn't running
for
office. That's a person who was showing moral courage
for
her community.
5'4", not 100 pounds, soaking wet, a really very beautiful woman who looked like that wonderful singer, and I'm blanking on her name right now, the African-American singer, who worked as a milliner, as a seamstress, and yes, was part of the civil rights movement there, and had decided that she was going to do this sometime, and that day it did happen. A person who had no background, didn't want to do anything else, did work for the civil rights movement the rest of her life, just did not get up and was fined $15, and that began what we know to be the civil rights movement.
It's unbelievable. Just think everybody knows that name. But would you put into this category whistleblowers?
Yes. Although whistleblowers, as someone who's studied business ethics for years and years and years, have horrible repercussions. 90% of whistleblowers who blow the whistles in situations which are really awful say, I wouldn't do it again because my life has been ruined or so manipulated that I no longer have my life, and no longer have the good things of life. But I think whistleblowers do have this moral courage. And by the way, the same thing here is with Churchill, that you've got to be willing to do it. He was almost killed once in a bombing raid, and he said to his aide, would have been a good day to die. It was okay. This notion that he had to do this, he had to be there. And I think moral courage is living out what you value.
Mm. Professor Al Jeany, he's the author of 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders, Leadership and Character, the co-author with Ronald Green. He's also our resident philosopher here in Extension 720, as well as a professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University Chicago. All right, Professor, let's take a break. We're already behind.
I know.
Way too much explaining.
I'm sorry.
Let me tell you every word that's on here. This is what leader means. This is what virtues mean. I just want to get to the list. We have eight more to go.
Okay.
So we're going to bust our butt in the second half of this hour. 312-981-7200 if you would like to contribute here on Extension 720. Stay with us.
This is Extension 720 on WGN Radio. Here's Justin Kaufman.
Back in studio with Professor Al Jeany, our resident philosopher here on Extension 720, talking about leadership. It's based on his book from 2013, 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders, Leadership and Character. He co-wrote with Ronald Green. Our resident philosopher is also the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University of Chicago. And he joins us monthly, I would say once a month or so. In the summer, it's been a little bit, you know, here and there. We're talking about the 10 virtues of outstanding leaders. We only got through two before the first half hour.
Well, they're hard. They're hard.
So let's get to the third right, one.
Moral vision.
Moral vision.
This is a special virtue. This is the ability, and very few leaders have this too, and they're special leaders, to see what's needed into the future, to understand that your job is not simply the immediate. That's a manager. Mm-hmm. I'm here to make sure the swimming pool is full.
Right.
But you have to understand, should we have a swimming pool? What's the purpose of a swimming pool? Who do you want to bring to the swimming pool? And the two great examples of this are Nelson Mandela and Churchill. They understood that they were players in this cosmic worldwide event for Mandela, freedom of all people, not just black people, and equality of all people.
Right, right.
But he saw his life as part of this play, part of this dimension, and understood that he would have to go through this. And Churchill understood in 1933, when he was a backbencher, when nobody was listening to him, he drank his scotch or drank his bourbon or his champagne more than anything else, by the way. And he was writing his books and blah, 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 blah. He's saying these Nazis, that's how he pronounced it, these Nazis. He says, this is not just another political group. And I know that the royal family is related to the Germans, but this is the evil. This is the devil. And we have to prepare to do this now. And nobody believed him until 39.
And you see that. I think American leaders, business leaders and presidents have shown a lot of moral vision, whether Democrats or Republicans, in the last 20 years. Even the president, you can make an argument, the president that's in there now,
he has a moral vision.
Moral
vision.
So that's something that we feel is obviously a virtue to the leaders that we know today, contemporary. All right, let's keep going.
All right.
Compassion and care. By the way, on moral vision, I like a small foray into management. I did not have moral vision. My thing was, I was working at a radio station. I was like, we'd be talking about what the future is. I'm like, oh man, in 20 minutes we got this story.
Right, right.
We need this story.
Right.
I'll do it. Get out of the way.
Yeah, the immediate. I think a good leader knows.
Not a good leader.
A good leader knows the particulars and the larger vision.
Yeah.
You have to see that. How do you do that? That's
right.
Why we all gain weight, because you're just seeing, oh, this is a bonum delictivi. This is good. You don't see the vision that, and now I'll be 280 pounds by next
So week. You're saying my stop at CVS tonight to get the Twitter nibs was a bad idea?
Probably.
Right. Okay,
because you didn't
going.
Bring me along. Compassion and care.
This is
the human element. This is Bill Clinton. He was a polymath in some sense.
I feel your pain.
No. He's a polymath in some sense, and certainly a policy guy. And he read everything. He did this, but he had to work a crowd sometimes excessively. Let's not go into that right now, since your son's in the room. But you know what I'm talking about right now. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton had to be hands on. Bill Clinton was from Arkansas. Bill Clinton knew everybody's name in Arkansas. I have a wonderful story about Bill Clinton. I gave this speech, and he came to this thing at University of Maryland on leadership when I was in the Kellogg Foundation. And working on this leadership project, and Bill was Mr. Clinton. Excuse me.
Yeah, wow. Look at
I meet him in the reception line, and Al Gore, who was on the panel, says, "Oh, this is my friend Al Jeany from Loyola University in Chicago." And he says, "Oh, Loyola, wonderful school. Nice to meet you. You know, my wife is from Chicago. Yes, I know. Thank you." And I'm gone. Right, the less than 10 seconds. A month later, at University of Maryland, we're out for another meeting. He's invited in for a cocktail party, and we're waiting for him, and I'm in the front part of the reception just having a drink and waiting. And suddenly the doors open. These four goons walk in, Treasury Department guys. And Mr. Clinton comes in between them and says, "Oh, Al Genie, I'm glad you're here. I just
do you ever watch the show Veep?
Yes. Oh
yeah,
my
well,
God.
That was what's his name? The Gary. The yeah, guy's like, this is Al name.
Right, 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 right. No, 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 no. There was no way. No, there was no way for that to be the case.
He did it on the camera before he got the door.
And he said that
you
know Arkansas is so small. If he didn't know three quarters of the names, he wasn't going to elect a dog catcher.
Well, there you go. So compassion and care. And this is something though. Again,
being human. Being human.
I think, and you reference Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah.
As a good example of a leader who, whether or not she actually did, she did build this idea. This whole personality that she did care.
She did
that
care.
She was connected with her father.
And absolutely, and I think that's critical. You have to feel that this is a human being there and you're not just an automaton.
Mm. All right, let's get to the next one. What do we got here for number five?
Fairness.
This is fairness.
And that's about leadership. Dwight David Eisenhower was a wonderful example of this. Dwight David Eisenhower was about as interesting as watching cheese grow mold. but he was a management person. He really understood this. He never fired a gun in anger, but he was always, you know, always in development, always in strategy. And Eisenhower said these wonderful things: never dress a man down in front of others, because you'll never have his respect again. Never put somebody down. And fairness for him was important. That if we're going to share this burden, if we don't do this fairly, and that's what America's arguing about right now. Well, I don't, you know, are we going to only ones going to be taxed here? Or who's going to be taxed to do this? We want all these things, a real problem with the Democratic Party. And as a longstanding college professor, we're going to pay for college? Whew, tell me how that one's going to work out.
Right.
But the notion is, even behind it, how do we be fair in society? What's fair in society? Who gets the right to Medicare? Who or medicine? Who gets the right to schooling, et cetera, et cetera? And that's one of the issues we're fighting about in every campaign.
Well, let's take it out of politics for a second. Does fairness play out in the same way when it's a business leader, CEO? Does it play out when it's the Boy Scout
troop?
Yeah,
I mean, for the first time, 150 years later, after Aram Navaram, you've got the head of Morgan Stanley saying, or all these banks saying, you know, you should probably make enough money and a good job to live a decent life.
Yeah.
Well, we've known that forever. And isn't that what business ethics has been arguing about? That my labor should be sufficient for me to live with dignity and not have to grovel.
But we've seen so much, and a lot of it is stereotype, and you're closer to it with the teaching business ethics, but we've seen the CEO, the American CEO, be the opposite. We've seen them going, whatever I can do to get mine, to get my shareholders their money, I don't care if we outsource this to Mexico, to China, I don't care if we take away jobs. There's been so much made about
and it's the
fairness not playing out with leaders in business.
It's the fallacy of the eight miles away from the booth school. I'm sorry, University of Chicago notion of Milton Friedman, that the major and the only responsibility of a CEO or a business is to increase the profits and well-being of their business to make a profit. I think that's profits are necessary, but it's not the main reason. It shouldn't be the main reason.
Well, we could do 2 hours on fairness, because you'll have some of our leaders today, political leaders, like you said, on the Democrat side, just talking about fairness and equity.
Yeah.
But then you have the president who, through Twitter and others, saying fairness in how we are in the country, or how much money we give NATO, or how long Rod Blagojevich's sentence was, but whatever it is, there's constantly this use of the word fair.
That's right.
It's different to different people.
Fairness has the descriptive qualities of the concept of beauty. What's beauty?
right.
It's so it good. Depends.
All right. Let's keep going.
Now there's three here. We're going to make it to one. Right. Intellectual excellence.
We've got time.
But creative thinking and aesthetic sensibility.
Okay.
This is about being smart.
Okay, so this is, name them again. Intellectual excellence.
Creative thinking. And aesthetic sensibility. Now, intellectual excellence, I mean you're well-read and well-bred. Creative thinking is you see beyond the box. And aesthetic sensitivity is Steve Jobs.
Okay.
That computer wasn't just wonderful. It was satisfying. It drew you in. I'm talking about intellectual excellence, being well-read, well-schooled, well-staffed. Mm-hmm. Well-staffed. The best leader. 70% of leadership fails from a radical staff infection.
Okay. That's good.
Right?
Okay, I'll push back on the intellectual excellence, because I feel like intellectual is a word that has become demonized.
Yeah.
Where you have too many people who have become erudite and intellectualized, and another part of the country that says you're just being pretentious.
Brain power. And brain power also includes sensitivity. Mm-hmm. When my students say to me, "How do you know that?" You know, and I'm talking about the Civil War. I said, "Well, I was there. Unfortunately, they believe me. But the point is, it's a book, right? I read it in a book, as Jimmy Durante said. I wasn't there at Charlemagne's christening, but I read about it. And I think what we're talking about intellectual excellence is being curious, almost just demanding of facts and figures, logical, and diligent and disciplined. So, and intellectual excellence to me as a student, some, you know, C's get you degrees, and a lot of CEOs were straight C students and they're billionaires.
C's get you degrees.
Right? C's get you degrees.
You're full of them tonight.
Oh, I'm full of them right now.
C's get you degrees.
They
like
do.
That.
But so the grade doesn't mean, straight A students are very often are simply vacuous. I see straight A students who just memorize everything.
Yeah, right.
And I'm proud of them for that. All right. Their work habits are great. Mm-hmm. But they didn't retain anything. So, you know, I got to say something about Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton would get off a plane in any city and he'd be carrying a book of an author of that city, but he read that book.
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton was avarice. They sat down there. If you want to understand the relationship between Bill and Hillary, they're both great minds who, and also in pursuit of power, but knew how to do that together.
Creative thinking is interesting because you put think outside the box.
Yeah.
How often, because I always feel that can be positive and negative.
Oh, it is.
Because you're going to get some who are like, it's positive. Steve Jobs is thinking about a different way to look at technology. But you could apply the same thing to a bank and you're like, nah, I don't think outside the box. I don't need $4 fees.
Right. Right. Now, but I think Steve Jobs is the example. Now, you got to remember, Steve Jobs was a boss from hell. He was just an absolute bastard in regard to how he dealt with people, et cetera, et cetera. But he had a vision, and that vision has changed how we learn, what we learn on, how we communicate, and what we know.
Do you have to be nice to be a leader?
It would be nice to be nice, but it's not a requirement.
But it's not in your list. Yeah.
It's a requirement to be a husband to be nice, but it's not a requirement to be nice if I'm head of surgery at Northwestern Hospital. There are requirements of civility. There are requirements of good taste, you know, dealing with decorum, et cetera, et cetera. But do you have to be nice? In fact, this man has been dead a long time ago, and I interviewed him years and years ago in my book on the importance of jobs. And he was a surgeon, and he said, why was a surgeon? Because he didn't like dealing with people. He didn't have to do anything except read the pre-op, do the surgery.
Walk in with the mask on, do it, and get out.
Do the surgery.
You don't talk to the surgeon, right. Professor Algini, we've got our 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders, which is based on his 2013 book, 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders, Leadership and Character. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the final two for your 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders. Algini in studio. Stay with us. Wrapping up the hour with Professor Algini, our resident philosopher. He's a professor of business ethics over at Quinlan School of Business, Loyola University of Chicago. He's also the author of 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders, Leadership and Character, the co-author Ronald Green, published in 2013. We're talking about the 10 Virtues of Outstanding Leaders tonight. Just to give you sort of a better understanding of what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about one candidate or one party or one.
I want to measure the candidates against some of these virtues.
Right.
And other people have other standards as well. But the person has to live out certain things. And that's how you judge someone.
Right.
You judge somebody by what they value, what they have to say, how they act, so on and so forth. And one of the examples I used to use in class all the time, and I say to the young ladies, you meet a charming fellow at the bar on Saturday night or Friday night. He seems very, very nice. And you really like him, and he asks you out. And then I see you 4 days later. So how'd that work out? I said, please, I don't even want to talk about it. We went out 3 times, and that was enough for me. I think that we want to see, you know, we put our best foot forward. That's great.
But we don't want a bar hookup as the president.
We don't want a bar hookup as the president.
We've had a couple of those already,
but let's talk about that.
That's what this whole hour is about. Boiled down to.
All right, good timing is one of the
good timing is number 9.
This is really, really important. Good timing is part of life. When you invest, when you hold back, you know, when you hold them, when you fold them, et cetera, et cetera. But good timing really is exemplified in Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln is such a good example of so many things. I want to use it because we're familiar with him. Lincoln realized that, you know, that the freeing the slaves may not happen. They were losing the war. The North was not winning the war. And he only won the second election because Sherman took Atlanta. And so there was a chance to go on. And he wasn't an abolitionist, but he knew that this war was about slavery. To deny that was, you know, it wasn't about secession. It was about slavery. And he said, we have to do something now. So he concocted the notion, well, slaves are chattel. That means they're property. So any black people that we come across in the lands that we have occupied from the secessionists, he didn't recognize the Confederacy as a state, mm-hmm. that means that's property of war, and we're going to free them. Mm-hmm. So the Emancipation Proclamation only freed slaves insofar they were in captive Union territory. Once the war was over, the question was, would they be slaves? But he had to do that to say, look, we can make them free.
Timing works in such interesting ways when it comes to politics and business, but politics, I think, Jimmy Carter.
Yep.
Jimmy Carter being someone who was victimized by timing,
right.
Meaning, you know, the economy went south. The same with, you can make the argument for George H.W. Bush, who was riding high, and then the timing was just, the economy went south right when there was an election coming up.
Right.
The question on timing is, how do you make that a virtue when it's about timing? I mean,
you cannot control what's around you. It's using the moment most efficiently. I mean, that's what timing is about, using the moment most efficiently.
So President Obama recognizing that the time was right to pass universal health care.
Right. And it wasn't perfect. And he knew
this was the window.
This is the best we could do. And now everyone is saying that, you know, detractors as well. Well, it's sort of working. We got to play with it, but at least it's sort of working.
But if he would have waited two more years,
it would have been gone.
But the idea to recognize, think big, this is now. Right.
And so timing becomes really critical. When do you tell your wife, I did put that down payment on that car, you know, I just couldn't let it go. But it is. It's about knowing when's the right time to have the adventure, to make the choice. And that's the kind of acuity that we see in really special leaders who just make the right decision at the right time. You know, Grant saying, all right, we're going to pull back in a couple of battles and we're going to take this brunt. And while we're taking this brunt, he's going to move all the way around the other side. Mm. And so it's the timing becomes exquisite. But if they didn't make it in 11 minutes, and I'm forgetting the battle right now,
I read the book. We just read the Revolutionary War book that just came out. I'm slipping on
Washington.
Washington comes up because it's all about timing.
Right.
Because he escaped
everything
with the Continental Army by the hairs on the back of their neck.
His timing was never get into a pitch battle.
Yeah, right.
Shoot and run.
And he team is a good time.
Good. All right.
The final of the 10 virtues.
Deep selflessness. To give up oneself for a cause and to live that cause even at the price of your own life. That's a hard thing to do. And Nelson Mandela is the example. 27 years in a prison, 19 of those years in a small cell on Robbe Island, who gave up himself, went into prison, an atheist, communist, militant, came out a Democrat, and a believer in this power of God and the world, who saw the prison as the university of life, who saw that he had to better himself, who took these leaders, they read books, they talked. He had to make himself something in order to save his country, but he was willing to live for that. And he was willing to die for that.
But the real cause, when you're talking about this, you're talking about, it's not that outstanding leaders, they're not unselfish.
No.
They have their own goals.
That's right.
But they put the goals of their followers or their country or their business or whatever in front of their own.
And I think that's really important. Martin Luther King was not a perfect man, but Martin Luther King really lived a cause out, even if that meant he saw his children only. He traveled. I think he made 346 speeches in one 11-month period. Mm. I mean, how is that even possible? So I think leadership is also about sacrifice of self, but it's also about doing the right thing for the right reason on purpose. And that's hard. You know, a good athlete, it prepares himself, and I think a good leader has to prepare himself. But as Machiavelli said, you need virtue, you need intelligence, but fortuna is always the trick in the room, right? Jimmy Carter and the Iranian situation and sending helicopters that suck sand into the manifold, and he lost the presidency because of it.
You also had, as part of the prep, we didn't get to it, is Doris Kearns. She has a great
list. She's a student of history, but so she includes the one that I didn't do it, that a successful leader has to have a good sense of humor about life, about themselves, and about others. That is, they have to laugh with and about life in order to survive life. I think the longer you're in power, believe it or not, I'm going to quote a Nazi, Albert Speer said, that one of the problems of Hitler is he never walked away from it. He never took time off. That Lincoln went to theater 100 times in 4.5 years while he was in Washington, because that was the only way to get away from the brutalities of the war. We need to recreate ourselves by standing down.
Fascinating stuff, as always. Professor Al Genie, the professor of business ethics at the Quinlan School of Business at Loyola University and a resident philosopher here on Extension 720. We'll see you soon. Well, it's coming September. You going to do something?
Absolutely. And maybe we'll talk about lying and why people do it.
Oh, lying and why people do it next time on Extension 720. Welcome back to Extension 720 on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We're out of the studio, and we're in Wicker Park right now. Wicker Park, one of the greatest weekend things to do for Chicagoans, just walk up and down Milwaukee Avenue. And this weekend would be the weekend to do it because they're doing their end-of-summer sales here in the Bucktown Wicker Park area. One of the places that you got to stop into is Reckless Records, which has been here for years. Melissa Grubbs is the manager of this store and has been here for years as well. Melissa, thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Reckless Records. And I want to get to what you guys are doing for the weekend, and I want to talk a little bit about how you guys stay in business in a weird time for music. You guys are opening up for this sale. You're opening up your basement. It's kind of a bargain basement idea, but you're actually adding more to the store.
So we're putting out a lot of things that just haven't gone into stock yet. Some deals. We have too much stuff, so we're just price gunning some things and letting people find some gems down here.
What was down here before? I mean, we're in the basement of Reckless Records. Kind of feel like we're in a sacred space. There's probably a lot of stuff down here.
Storage, incoming records. We go and buy stuff. We bring it and before it gets sorted into stock. So we just carved out some room and thought we'd open it up to the public.
And more wall space for all the posters and all the different things that we see, whether it be George Clinton. There's a Weezer poster over here. Metallica, I think, was over here. Walking into Reckless Records for me, and I'm someone who has been a record store guy for a long time, I've fallen off. Like, I don't go in. So when I walk in now and I see records, CDs have been relegated to the back. It is all about records. When did that happen? When did Reckless Records decide that LPs and records was a way to go?
Well, we've always carried records. So even when vinyl was out and CD was king, we continued to stock records. Now that it's flip-flopped and records are rising in popularity, we still do carry CDs and there's still a market for it. So we carry both. But yeah, we've always been in the record game.
So the records, but the vinyl has such a resurgence that's front and center. When you walk in, you're looking at new LPs, new records, new vinyl. Because I remember coming in Reckless and it was, I'm dating myself, but it's like it was CDs and the records were in the back.
I'd say absolutely. Our staff has always been fans of records. We're all vinyl nerds, and so that's what we've always bought and championed. And now that in a digital age with records, it's you get to hold the piece of art how it's meant to be. In the 70s, 60s, you would buy a new record, listen to that record, and look at the cover and enjoy it, and the whole package that the artist meant to present to you. And that's, I think, coming back a little bit with opposition to digital.
For you to stay in business and be relevant, how important is that, to have that tactical experience, that idea that not only are you holding and you're purchasing something, but at the same time belonging to a community of almost aficionados or people who are collecting this stuff?
Well, the nice thing about a store is that, like ours, is that you can come in and see something that you didn't know existed. You know, that you come in for one thing and then see this other really cool art piece, really, is what a record cover is, and discover it and listen to it and, ask one of us about it, and we're happy to talk to you about it. Just discover new things that you wouldn't be able to do streaming.
Yeah. I always remember the fight used to be against big corporate record stores, whether it be Tower Records or even Walmarts and people like that. And then the counterculture option was Reckless or the other places in Chicago. Is it still that way? Do you see yourself as competing against the big box stores? Or now is it just I'm competing against people just listening on their phone?
I think it's a little bit of both, unfortunately for us. when major labels give exclusive rights to places like Urban Outfitters and Target, and you can only get that record that's top 40 at those places for a limited amount of time, it's hard for us to have someone walk in on us Saturday and say, I'm sorry, I can't give you that. They're not giving it to us.
So, they're not even pressing vinyl
right.
half the time, right?
Tons of music that isn't available at all on record or CD, which is very frustrating because there are people that want to buy it and we want to sell it to them. So that's a little frustrating, but there's still tons of great music that is coming out and is available.
Music's always been, I would say it's always been a marketplace for culture.
How important is that for Reckless Records to still be at the forefront of culture, whether it be rock and roll, whether it be independent, or any of the stuff that you sell in here? How important is it to be selling culture at Reckless Records?
Culture is everything for us. It's from community, of having people come in the store and getting to talk to them, to, you know, we buy every day from the public. So when someone comes in with their collection, it's my favorite thing, is to talk to someone who had that record first, you know, and remembers buying it in the 60s in the store and playing it for their kids, and then now I get to buy it and give it to someone else to appreciate that never would have had a chance because they're 20 and weren't around in the 60s, you know? So there's a plethora of music for all here.
We're talking with Melissa Grubbs. We're in the basement of Reckless Records, 1379 Milwaukee. Is
that, yes, correct.
All right, look at me. Huh? Right here, as this weekend's going to be a big sale where all the stores are doing kind of an end-of-summer thing right here in Milwaukee. Like I said, my wife and I love to come and just kind of walk up and down Milwaukee Avenue. Reckless Records is a part of that, and they're opening up their basement for deals. But the business has changed so much, and we've seen this not only in music, but we've seen it with books and other places where the independent stores have had a harder time because the industry as a whole has decided to go online. And it's no different with music. The tech giants who have control, whether it be Apple or any of the ones that have Spotify, all the people on the coast, they almost feels like their goal was to kick record stores out of the business. And they did everything they possibly could. How do you deal with that when innovation is constantly happening to try and kick you guys out of business?
Well, I'm not gonna lie, it is hard, but it's thankfully, you know, there's enough people out there that appreciate the arts in every capacity. There are, you know, some of the problems definitely of not releasing music, you know, at all, and, you know, definitely hope that labels and management and whatnot realize that there is a market and a
so they're not
need.
Even they're not even artists aren't even releasing to anything. They're just going straight to online and that's it.
Right,
they're just hitting upload. They're not putting it on vinyl. They're not putting it on CD. They're like, get rid of that. Let's just go straight to the phones.
Right, and it's, you know, the artists are leaving money on the table, and you know, there's music fans that are not able to support their artists because a lot of people, you know, it's a way to support and collect something by their favorite artists, and that's, you know, we definitely hope that it comes back.
Not unlike independent booksellers, the independent record stores, you guys have kind of come together around the country. I mean, there's conferences and other things to try and battle or at least figure out how to deal with some of these challenges. Does the record industry or the music industry, they listen? Do they see you as a viable partner, or are they just like, it's time to get rid of record stores?
No, I think so. I mean, the industry definitely, you know, they want to sell music too. So I definitely think that they're on our side. You know, just certain types of music, it would be great if it was released.
Right.
But thankfully, there are tons of other artists and things available for people to buy every day.
We have seen more and more artists skip major labels, or even labels in general, go independent. And Chicago artists do that, whether rock and roll, hip-hop, whatever it might be. Are you have the ability to go straight to them? Like if an independent artist like Whitney or Twin Peaks or someone in Chicago, can you just work a deal with them to say, we want your LP in here, as opposed to going through somewhere else?
Well, we do carry bands like that, and we've had both of those bands play in the shop as well. And Twin Peaks is going to be doing another in-store soon. You know, but definitely things like Chance the Rapper, that's someone that we would love to carry his record, and he is releasing them, but as of now, it's only through his website. So that's definitely something we've been reaching out to try and get him to let us stock his stuff, you know?
You mentioned in stores, and I didn't even think about that, but also the artwork that's around the posters, the beautiful stuff that we see. How important is the ancillary stuff, not just selling music, but having bands have a relationship where they come in and play acoustic, or the artwork that you guys hang?
Well, I mean, that goes back to community, of that we want to support artists. So we have bands come in that are just up and coming that we want to support, that we like, and want to give them a chance for more people to be heard. And then we've had giant bands come through, like Jack White, and, you know, Nine Inch Nails did a panel in here. So a range of artists, and definitely community and making a place that people can come, and our shows are free, and they can come and buy the new record and hang out, meet people, artists that they respect, and the artists get to see their fans in a way that they might not from a giant stage.
Right. You know, how has Chicago been to Reckless? You guys have a great relationship, it seems like, with this town. Is Chicago a music town?
Absolutely. I mean, great artists have always come from Chicago. There's, you know, obviously the blues and, you know, Wax Trax and all that they gave us. And the just the amount of people that had records over the years that have brought them to us to sell and put back out for other people to have is phenomenal. You know, it's a endless source. Just when you think that there can't possibly be any records left here, we find more, and it's great.
Well, Melissa, this is going to be open, the basement that we're in, and it's everything from VHS to CDs to vinyl to posters, everything down here. It starts this weekend, but it's going to stay open. This is not just
opening weekend. We're going to finally let the people in.
There you go.
I want to get down the stairs for years.
Melissa Grubbs is the manager here at Reckless Records on 1379 North Milwaukee. This weekend is the big end of summer sale for Bucktown Wicker Park, and Reckless is part of it. Thanks so much, Melissa, for showing us everything down here and talking about music.
Well, thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
Promo reminds me that my son Miles and I had this grandiose idea this summer that we were going to become running partners, and we were going to actually start running around the park that's right by our house, and we were going to get into a whole thing, and we never did.
I don't really feel like comfortable talking with that, talking about that.
Why?
Because I don't like talking about my failures.
Oh, it's not your failure. It's my failure.
It's both of our... It's a team failure.
Well, my son Miles. Yeah, well, we walked it one time. We got to the point where we said, well, let's walk the route. Mm. So we walked around the park and went, this is where we'll run when we decide to run. And then we never did it. Now, mind you, it got hot. It got summer.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
It got rainy. But you do. You go. You do a good enough job, I believe, in physical fitness. You should do more, but you go on Saturdays to the gym.
Yeah.
He's got a gym.
Yeah.
He goes to a class.
Yeah.
You don't like the class? What's the matter?
Oh, I'm saying I like class. I just haven't been going often.
Hmm. Well, you've been out of town. You're different. So for you, you just got back from seeing both your set of grandparents. You saw your grandparents in Indiana, and then in Wisconsin. What were the highlights of your trip? You went on a pottery making class?
Yes, we went on a pottery making class. It wasn't really a class. It was like, so one of my grandmas are, I call her Nana, which will just make me easier than saying grandma number two. So Nana, she made pottery. She makes pottery.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me how to make some pots, and I painted the pots.
Wow.
And they have to fire so they can be glazed and beautiful, just like me. That was a joke. I mean, I am beautiful, but that was a joke.
Yeah.
And they probably won't be ready until, like, probably next week.
But and then with grandma number one, you went to a pottery store or something? And
we
you...
went to, like, a ceramic store. And we painted some stuff.
That's the idea, right? You make a, like, it's a plate, and you can paint the plate, and then they do the same thing. They fire it in, like, a week. You come pick it up or something like that?
Yeah.
Have you seen your work, your artwork?
No. Hmm. I've not. I've not seen the full version.
Okay.
I painted a cat.
Okay, there it is.
The painting multicolored a cat. It wasn't like a regular cat.
If you're just joining us, Miles, my son, is with us. He is a Chicago public school student, so that means they don't go back to school until the end.
CPS, YOLO, MP3s, all about the hype, hashtag squad goals,
all right.
I guess.
There it is.
Dab.
Got them all. You put it all in...
I put it all.
You did
in
all
sentence.
In one.
Yay!
No, well, anyway, he doesn't go back, and camps are over, and stays at grandma's are over. So he is back with us, and chose that he wanted to come to work tonight, even though this is right around bedtime. So are you starting to feel the effects? Are you crashing from the massive amount of candy that you have eaten tonight?
I'm not crashing.
And are you still sour at the fact that I did not let you have that last piece of candy?
No, I am sour, but probably because I ate a whole Mike and Ike's Mega Mix of sour Mike right. and Ike's.
But you got real salty.
I did. I gave him the stink eye for like 2 full minutes.
Because I would not let you have one more piece of Hershey's candy.
Yes, you wouldn't. And that was a really... That lowered my spirits.
I hope you'll be okay, Miles.
I will not recover.
All right.
God.
Coming up, we are going to talk with a download in Chicago business with Doug Cook from Feldco. Feldco, of course.
The windows, hanging doors.
Here it is. Says the. We're going to talk a little bit about this. The of course, the jingle, the famed jingle that if you're going to be a Chicago business, it feels like you have to have an iconic jingle. Feldco does, and how important it is to the marketing of their business. That's coming up on Extension 720, so stay with us.
It's business time. It's business. It's business time.
Welcome to the Download on Chicago Business. I'm Justin Kaufman, this segment sponsored by Signature Bank. Joining us today, none other than Doug Cook, the CEO of Feldco. Feldco has gone beyond just being a Chicago company, now representing most of the Midwest. The window, siding, and door company is more than a jingle, but that jingle has seared itself into Chicago's brain. The company has been around since 1976. Doug Cook, with me now in studio. Doug, thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, we've talked before, and it's great to see you again. I think we could take a really focus on what it takes to acquire a business, because I say that Feldco has been around since 1976, but you haven't been with the company that long. Talk about taking over Feldco and why you decided to acquire a company in the home improvement sector.
I bought Feldco nearly 20 years ago, in the year 2000. It was for sale because its owner and founder, a gentleman by the name of Bernie Feld of Feldco, was looking to retire. He was 80 plus years old, didn't have anybody to sell the company to family-wise, employee-wise, and basically put the business on the open market. I had the good fortune of meeting him, and I had been looking to acquire a business up till that point. And when I sat down with Bernie and learned more about the company itself, what I quickly learned was that my background, which was a heavy marketing background, was going to be a good fit for what this company needed. I like to tell people the company was dusty. It wasn't rusty. Rather, it just needed a good refresher.
When you're in the business of trying to acquire a company, are you looking for a passion play? Are you just looking for something you're interested in? Or as a businessman, do you have to put that to the side and say, I'm looking for what's going to make me profit?
It's very subjective. To each their own. There are some people, some business folks, entrepreneurs that would look at you and say, I don't care what the business does as long as it can make money or I can figure out a way to have it make money. In my search for businesses, I did need to have something that I had some passion for. I figured that an entrepreneurial venture is something that's 24/7. It's all consuming. And if you don't have some sort of inner passion about what you're doing, that will not be a path to success.
Where do you find that passion? Because I would just assume someone with a marketing and broadcast background yourself, mm-hmm. maybe windows, siding, and doors, not necessarily a hobby for you. But so where do you find the passion when it isn't front and center?
When you do go in and look and investigate businesses that may be for sale, it's vitally important to understand what is that business all about. Is it a manufacturing company? Is it a service business? Does it require a lot of overhead? Does it have a lot of staff? Is it more virtual, that it has a lot of outsourced things? And
right.
all those characteristics of a company play into what a potential buyer should want or not want, and understand what is going to be required of you as the leader of that company, and do you have that? Can you dig deep in the moments that you need to dig deep to bring forth right, what right. is necessary to overcome a challenge? In my world, I do have to have a passion about what it is that I do, and specifically about Feldco, because I do get asked that question frequently. What about windows, siding, and doors is so exciting? In short, what it is it's a marketing puzzle. You know, a big part of what Feldco is, aside from windows, siding, and doors, is we have to sell and market.
Yeah.
And we have to get people to call or click for
well, inquiry. That's a great transition into the jingle, which is by far one of the more successful jingles in Chicago history, a town that is just full of historic jingles. Mm-hmm. How important is that for you to have that kind of commercial, that kind of number where you sing the what you do and then say the number? How important is it to have that hook?
Vital. no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You hit on it earlier. We're both Chicago guys. We grew up here. And growing up, I can sing you any number of, of jingles that I've heard on the TV over the years. So when I first came to Feldco 2 decades ago, we didn't have that jingle. In fact, we didn't do TV. We did primarily print. So there was no need for a jingle. But I felt, given my background and just my experience, I felt that this was something that would really kind of evolve us into the next frontier for Feldco. And lo and behold, it has done just that. I can't tell you how many times we have people singing the jingle to us, little kids, adults. I'll be out and, you know, any random places, and all of a sudden I'll get the jingle belted out. It's amazing.
But advertising has changed, and now you may have campaigns. I think of, you know, some of the national brands. When you think of beer commercials or possibly insurance companies, mm-hmm. they'll have a campaign. They'll have one spokesperson. Can you hear me now? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. For you to stick with a jingle and stay with this concept, which is a concept that is traditional and one that was born out of the 50s and the 60s, mm-hmm. why not switch? Why not go with something more trendy? Why stay with a jingle like the one for Feldco?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Number one.
Right.
I'm not going to purport to be smarter than other folks out there. We measure everything. And so when we see the results that come in off of this jingle, it's tough to kind of throw those results into the wind.
So you
and
see
say,
results.
Let's go
so people have a problem
direction.
With their windows, and they're like, you see results coming off of that jingle.
Correct. We've what they call beta tested things, where we've created commercials with the jingle and we've created commercials without the jingle. And I can unequivocally tell you that the jingle trumps the non-jingle every day of the week. There's no comparison. The jingle is unbelievably effective. And there's so much clutter out there. I think it's one of the ways in which we can kind of break through and really be distinguished.
And it's a dying breed in a way. The jingle is gone. They've moved on to different types of advertising that is designed to get you. But the jingle, you don't see too many jingles that are coming out with products today.
Correct. Because there's so much clicking, right? There's so much online stuff that people can click away from and so forth. We, with the development of that jingle, which started basically about 18 years ago, I'd like to say that we came in at the right time. I think it would be very difficult for somebody to try and undertake a jingle development the same way we did over these past 2 decades, just given the fact that the media landscape is different. And to have the repetition to be able to hammer that jingle tens of thousands of times a year through multimedia channels, it's just become more and more difficult to penetrate in this environment of 2019's media landscape.
As you expand and Feldco goes from being one Chicago company that now has outposts all over the Midwest, you have been acquiring other companies, namely Danley Garage, another great Chicago iconic company, mm-hmm. a company that everybody knows because of Cubs games back in WGN broadcasts throughout time. How hard is it to acquire a company after you've acquired a company? Meaning, you know, you put all this time and energy into it and you expand and expand and expand. Does it get easier to say, I'm going to start again?
I would say the buying and selling businesses is a tough business. There's no question about it. I think people that assume it's like buying a home, a piece of real estate, or an automobile, a large purchase like that, does so at kind of their own peril, because there are a lot of dynamics about it that are very different. So in short, like anything, practice and experience probably makes you a little bit more wise and you can be aware of what may be lurking around the corner. So I would say the first time out was really just kind of a galaxy of craziness, of just everything was new and it was the first of everything. Right. Having done this multiple times on an ensuing basis, I'm not going to tell you it's easy or easier. I will tell you that it's a little bit less cloudy.
Experience matters.
Experience does matter. Right.
But when you're handling such an iconic brand, iconic Chicago company like Danley or Feldco before that, are you looking for that? Are you seeking that kind of thing out? Are you saying, I know this company, I know what it means to Chicago, I'm going for that? That's what you're looking for?
For sure. We're brand builders. We like to build brands. We've done that with Feldco. We respect the Danley brand, having been in business for 60 years. And we also acquired a third company in the Chicagoland area called Early Times Home Solutions, which is a chimney service company located out of Elmhurst, but serving the entire Chicago metropolitan area, doing masonry work and cleanings and so forth with chimneys and the like. It's a great business. All of these businesses, Feltco, Danley's, Early Times, the youngest of the three businesses is nearly 30 years old. So these are well-known companies that homeowners have trusted to come into their homes and solve their problems. And I think that the distinguishing point with all of our companies that's very important is that none of our appointments are unsolicited, meaning that we're welcomed into every home we go into. We're not showing up.
Right.
We're being requested to come out to people's homes.
My dad in the 60s saying, you know, I used to work on roofs. That was going door to door.
Canvassing, as they call it. Right. In fact, I tell people that our companies, our three companies that we have that serve homeowners directly, there is not a single privately held company in the Midwest that is welcomed into more people's homes than our group of companies, Feltco, Danley, and Early Times. And that's the underscore there is trust. Nobody welcomes anybody into their home if they don't trust you. Preserving that trust, reinforcing that trust is a very important part of our businesses.
My last question for you, just as we talk about this being the download on Chicago business, and Chicago being the big word here, it's a big metropolitan area. It's a big city, and there are millions and millions of people that would require your services. As you continue to branch out and you do business in Indiana or Iowa or Wisconsin, is it the same? Do you have to think of the way that you serve a big metropolitan area like Chicago as opposed to maybe a little bit more of a rural area like Iowa?
I like to say people are people. We all put our shoes on one shoe at a time. We tie shoes accordingly. So I insist that what we have is a staff that reflects the communities that we serve. So the people that we have representing Feltco, Danley's, Early Times are I want neighbors, friends, relatives from people's communities because I want there to be a tie there. I want there to be a link that we're not just dropping in to hit and run, if you will. That's a very important part of it. And we need people to trust our company and companies. So reinforcing that at every step of the way, professionally, from a communication standpoint, if someone says, I want you there at 6:30, we're going to be there at 6:25. We're not looking to inconvenience anybody because people are calling us to solve their problems. Right. We don't need to exacerbate them in any way, shape, or form.
Always great to have you here, Doug.
Justin, thanks
for having
us.
It's always good conversations about business. Doug Cook, owner of Feltco, Danley Garage, and of Early Times, chimney company out of Elmhurst. My guest in the Download in Chicago business. Doug, thanks for being here.
Great to be here.
A little programming information, some notes coming up. This is our final Extension 720 before Labor Day. How about that? Because Pete and I are taking vacation next week, our annual end of August vacation. Not together, but we usually go to the same places. So are you going somewhere, Pete, that is specifically that you've been working on for a while? You told us this before, but you're going to
New York.
Yeah.
For a tennis trip.
Weekend. Yeah, again. How about that?
Second year in a row.
So you're just following. Are you following specific players, or are you just about the tournaments?
I thought you were talking about baseball. I was like, yes, I'm a Michael Conforto fan. That's just whoever, because I'm not sure who's playing on the days we're going. So you know, hopefully we'll see a Rafael Nadal or a Roger Federer or something.
Right. Is it sort of a crapshoot, and whatever day you're going, you just hope they're playing?
Yeah.
Do they do a lot of warm-up type stuff, or is it you just have to catch like them in their tournament game?
Yeah. I mean, they have practice. There's, you know, like it's, you know, at the beginning, the first week, there's tons of people. There's tons of smaller courts, you know, that you don't have to see on like the big Arthur Ashe Stadium.
Right.
You know, you can see some lesser matches in the smaller courts, which is fun.
Do you stay in New York City proper? Are you Brooklyn kind of guy to Manhattan and then go out? Or are you in Flushing?
Worst thing in lower Manhattan.
Yeah, class.
Yeah.
Class.
I think it's called a micro hotel.
Oh.
Not sure what that entails.
It's going to be a small room.
Yeah.
And it's New York City we're talking about, right?
Small room, high price.
Miles is here. My son Miles. You're a New York City fan, right?
Yes,
so
I am.
We went to New York last summer, and that was your first time, and we stayed in the Lower East Side, Manhattan, and we were out in Staten Island visiting some friends. You like New York. What would you tell Pete and Molly they have to check out in New York?
What you have to check out in New York is,
To put you on the spot?
Yeah, it did.
We went to the Lower East Side. We went to Cat's Deli, and we had the cheesecake and the black and white cookie.
Of course, gotta go.
That's okay.
It was okay. And then we went up to Central Park, and we sat on the rocks.
Central Park was pretty good.
Right? And we went down Broadway and Times Square, and you got to see some naughty stuff. Remember the...
Naked Cowboy?
Yeah, it wasn't a Naked Cowboy, but they had...
the Naked Minnie Mouses. The Naked Minnie Mice, I should say.
Right, the Naked Minnie Mice, which were...
Minnie so Mice.
You want to check that out, Pete and Molly, you could do that. But yeah, the... But yes, we did all the sites. We went all over the place, Miles. We went to, I feel like we went and saw 30 Rock and all that kind of stuff. Went up to the Upper West Side, Upper East Side.
Yeah, make a list.
Yeah. Went to Brooklyn to visit Aunt Kate.
Yes, we did. We did, yeah.
Okay.
We did a lot of stuff that only regarded to us.
Okay.
Well. So, like, it would be like, hey, Pete, go visit our Aunt Kate.
Right. Just knock on the door. Yeah.
These other people that I'm not going to share the names of.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like a great trip. Sounds like a great trip. We're going out to Seattle and Portland. We're doing the three things that we're going to check out. Seattle, of course, the Space Needle. Some 219 said, don't forget about the monorail. I was like, oh, yeah. Miles really wants to see. We go on YouTube. That's the beauty of the travel. Travel has changed so much that now I can just talk to my remote control and it pops up YouTube travel. Everybody's got a travel thing, right? Every amateur on YouTube has a... Hi, welcome to... I'm Justin. I got this travel show for you right now. Welcome to Seattle. 22 things to do in Seattle. And I've been trying to force Miles to watch it with me, but he doesn't want to watch it. But I finally found one where this guy was pretty good, and he talked about the Fremont Bridge Troll.
Yeah, of course.
Which
yeah.
now Miles is intrigued by that.
Am I, though?
Really pessimistic. You didn't like that?
Well,
it's a great place
to
take
like
a photo.
Intrigued about it.
Well, I mean, don't you want to see it?
It looks pretty fun, and right. I would like to visit, but I wouldn't say that I'm intrigued.
And the pop culture museum, which
yeah, the pop culture museum, I am intrigued about.
I'm trying to get I'm trying to play all the Pearl Jam I can.
What's
for Miles.
Pearl Jam?
Right.
I literally don't know what Pearl Jam is. That's not a scripted
joke. Pearl Jam came on when we were in the restaurant tonight getting dinner, and I said, this is Pearl Jam, and you just didn't stop talking about YouTube, but I seem to recognize that song that came on.
Oh, yeah.
That guy felt like he was like kind of whining into the microphone.
Yeah.
Heavy breathing.
I remember that.
That was Pearl Jam. So we're doing that. We're doing Portland, and Miles wants to go to Voodoo Donuts.
Yeah.
And then
I never really asked.
Wow. You're just not doing a yes and tonight, are you, Miles? You're just like, no, I don't want to do anything.
I never said I don't want to do anything. I'm just saying. You say, like, I want to go to Voodoo Donuts. I mean, sure, I want to go to Voodoo Donuts, but I never came up with the idea.
No, I'm just saying that you thought it looked cool.
What about a salt and straw? Is that on your list?
That was
the ice cream place,
yeah.
The ice cream place? Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, the ice cream place. I'm not good with names.
But what I want to do, and I don't know if it's going to happen, is I want to go to Astoria in Oregon on the coast because that's where they shot Goonies.
Yeah.
Right?
That's great.
And it's got the cool rocks, mm-hmm. and you can go out and see the little Hobbit. What was the Hobbit's name? The main guy in that in the Goonies. I forgot his name. Who's the guy who plays Samwise in
the guy who plays Bob in Stranger Things?
Yes,
oh,
nailed
I don't
it.
Know
I don't know his name. Right, he's the main guy in Goonies.
But let me search it up.
Let me search it up. Yeah, so hopefully we'll get out there and we'll be able to do that. So programming note, we won't be, because this is our final broadcast. The Sox are playing tomorrow night against Texas and Friday night against Texas here at G-Rate. I'm going tomorrow night.
Nice.
And then. Then next week we're on vacation. We come back after Labor Day. So we miss out. But if you want, you can check out Laura Wacker Live, which is the daily podcast. We'll continue to do that. We'll take a week off next week.
Is it Sean Astin?
It is Sean Astin. Good job, YouTube. Good job,
YouTube. It's not even YouTube. It's IMDb.
And good job on the search. You're a good researcher. You're a good assistant, Miles. But the...
Ooh, you also want to see Brittany Runs a Marathon? No. Amazon original.
Yeah, it's supposed to be great.
And what Marlon Wayans needs to make white chicks too.
All right. Okay. Good.
Let's Thanks, look for other things.
All right. So the so
the
you
disappearance
check out-
of Farisabalic has finally become clear. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I don't either. So anyway, the you can check out Lower Wacker Live today, which is at WGNradio.com, and Miles does a guest spot on the podcast. He does
guest.
It's essentially like doing a late night monologue. Did you like doing that?
Yes, I did. I loved it.
Yeah, you read
that
the I wrote
fun.
The words and you were able to deliver it. You're like Conan O'Brien.
Yeah. Oh. Conan O'Brien.
There it is.
Finest.
Pete McMurray coming up.